Welcome to Does the Team Think? And now here's your chairman, MacDonald Hoblay.
And in this program, you'll hear a variety of answers to a variety of questions put by a variety of people. So let's meet the people who'll be doing most of the answering. We have Cyril Fletcher, Tommy Trinder, Ted Ray, and the man who dreamed it all up, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And now, not very far away from me, is the man who's going to put a question to you, and it is Mr. Edward Marsh. Hello, Mr. Marsh. Let's hear your question.
Could the team explain the correct procedure for mounting or dismounting a bicycle whilst wearing a kilt?
Could the team explain the correct procedure for mounting or dismounting a bicycle whilst wearing a kilt?
Well, in the first place, you don't need a spanner, you need a spotter. No. And in the second place, you must do it like the hedgehogs make love, very carefully.
I have this bicycle, and I also have a Fletcher kilt.
Tell me, have you got a pair of cycle clips you want to sell? You won't be using those.
They're no good for a kilt, no.
No, I know, so you want to sell them.
So I did this, you see, and I was rather keen, and over keen, really, because I dashed at the bicycle, and the whole thing collapsed. And there I was, lying prostrate on my sporran. An old lady came along and accused me of running over her dog. And it took me forever to explain to her that it was my sporran and not her dog.
All right, Professor, the dog had taken refuge on top of her hat.
There was that Scotsman sitting in a bus, wasn't there, and the lady thought the sporran was a dog and kept offering it biscuits. After about half an hour, he'd ate one of them.
I don't believe that the Scots could be so terribly, you know, sort of idiotic, because they're a very canny race, the Scots. They're very intelligent people. They wouldn't be so idiotic as to
When are you playing Scotland? You're praising them up a bit, aren't you?
I'm no fool, Tommy.
He's had an injection of porridge.
Does it show? We'll make this a cereal. Now, anyway. These two fellows are riding the bicycles along in their kilts on the bikes, and one fellow comes to a little cottage, and he said, did you see the little cottage there? It says Tartan Tea 1 and 6. And the other fellow said, well, it can't be very good tea.
Professor Jimmy Edwards, would you like to tell us how you get on your bike?
I am not going to try and imitate the Scottish accent. Attractive, though, I do find it in real Scotsman. The question about getting on a cycle with a kilt on, it's obviously simple. You buy a lady's bicycle, don't you? One of those where you hold your knees together and just glide onto it.
And then you sit on a soft haggis.
But, Jimmy, if you were in a kilt and you couldn't hold your knees together, your sporran would get in the way.
No, well, there's ways of placing the sporran. Mr. Marsh, what are you afraid of? Why has this question got any point at all?
What I'd be afraid of getting on would be a cold saddle.
Oh, I see.
I do think there's one thing we should establish. A, is Mr. Marsh an Englishman? Or B, has he a Scottish bicycle? Or C, is he a Scotsman, and has he got an English bicycle?
Are you an Englishman, or are you a Scotsman?
I must be
English.
Do you have a bicycle?
A retired model, yeah.
Do you ever wear a kilt?
Retired?
No, never, no.
Oh, this question is just a sort of fantasy that you've thought up.
Well, fantasy that. It's a good question.
All I can say to Mr. Marsh is that instead of wearing his sporran, if at any time the occasion arises, and he's got to ride a bicycle in a kilt, if you're afraid of a cold saddle, you take your sporran off and put it on the saddle first. And you'll get tickled to death in the middle of your performance.
I will tell you something, that this goes on even in all walks of life, because I know that one nun asked her sister nun, why do you always ride a bicycle in your nun's costume? And she said, I can't get out of the habit.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mr. Marsh. I hope you always have a warm saddle. Thank you very much. And now, team, you're going to hear a question from Mrs. Jenny Price, who's now sitting next to me. Mrs. Price, have you got a question, perhaps not about kilts, Scotsmen and saddles?
What are the team's favourite sounds and tastes?
Yes. What are the team's favourite sounds and tastes?
Well, I'll tell you something. Tastes are acquired. When I was a young man sort of coming into show business and getting into a new way of life, and going to dinners and parties and things.
Ooh.
Anchovies.
Racy.
Olives. Anchovies, olives, oysters. Anathema.
How can you say what?
And I couldn't get the anathema down.
How can you say oysters in the same breath as anchovies? There's nothing, no relation between them at all.
Yeah, taste, it does come from the sea.
It's the taste buds, you see. It's the taste buds. Olives, I think, how can you eat those things? And anchovies. And now, of course, I go around all day long looking for olives. She's a lovely girl. Anchovies and oysters. You
well,
take me out to dinner,
rather
Jim.
Anchovies a nice girl, too.
What's your favourite sound, Ted?
I'll tell you, my favourite sound
when
is
my
when I'm playing on a golf course and I hear the distant laughter of children in a playground. This is the hope of the world to me, really. I mean
it. The distant laughter of children in the playground because I'm entertaining them. There. That's what it is. It
must be Jim's Academy for small children.
Jimbo, I think Jimbo it's the distant laughter of children in the playground because they've seen Ted drive.
But I go back to my younger days when I used to do a little bit of rowing. And I'd like to say this rather romantic thing, if I may, Tommy, because Ted has set the pattern for this, the answer to this program, that favourite sounds and tastes are rather romantic. And I like the almost silent susurration of a skiff sliding serenely over seaweed.
Could you say that again?
We've had a request. Could you possibly say that again?
The almost silent susurration of a skiff sliding serenely over seaweed.
But and I said it one thing, you can be sure the tide's out.
I would like to answer Mrs. Jenny Price's question very quickly, easily, and brilliantly, I think. She says, what are the team's favourite sounds and tastes? I don't mind the taste of drink, but I can't stand the sound of it.
Well, my favourite sound is the distant sound of somebody mowing the grass. Betty mowing the grass in the distance. And my favourite taste is Betty. That is the end of the Betty Astell show. Yes.
Mrs. Price, what is your favourite sound?
I like to hear my daughter asleep.
You hear her asleep?
Yes.
How do you
got adenoids or something?
No, it's adenoids, the soft, gentle breathing she makes.
The soft, gentle breathing?
It tells me she's asleep.
How old is she, Mrs. Price?
7 months.
7 months. Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
How do you know she's beautiful? She's probably just a lump of pudding like they
she's
all are.
She's beautiful.
Every child of 7 months is a lump of pudding and she's beautiful.
What did you look like when you were 7 months?
When I was 7 months?
It was pink and dimples. Now he's drinking pimples. That's it.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a funny thing, Mac. You should say that. I was talking to Sybil the other day. We met in the passage. And I said, look, dear.
Have you both moved into the same house now?
No, that's the passage between the houses.
And, you know, I said, you know, there was a marvellous photograph of me taken absolutely stark as when I was 8 months on a white bearskin rug. And she said, have you got it? I looked all through my desk and all my sort of, you know, things I keep, and it wasn't there. And she wants me to go and pose again.
I'd like to see a picture of a bearskin rug as well.
If we could get onto the tastes thing, we haven't done much about tastes. It's funny that you should bring up oysters, Ted, because they have oysters don't really taste, they sort of attack you.
But don't you, Jim, don't you find the crusts are so hard?
You have to open them first, Tom.
Oh, yes.
Really?
You are such a peasant, Tom. I'm sitting next to little Fletcher, the poet and the peasant.
Not only do you have to get them open, but you have to surprise them, don't you?
Mm. I can remember eating oysters in Spain once.
They're killers, they are.
As you squeezed the lemon on them, they screamed at you.
Well, being Spanish oysters, they wanted sherry. They didn't want lemon.
They were alive, you know. It's quite cruel, actually, eating oysters. They are actually living organisms. And the minute you put the lemon on them, it's like putting lemon up your nose or something.
Do you do that very often, put lemon up your nose?
Any more tastes? Any more sounds?
I'll tell you what, my wife wanted to take off some weight. And the doctor said, now look here, Mrs. Ray, he said, you know, calling her by her maiden name, Mrs. Ray. He said, well, now, what? He said, you've got to stop eating. You're eating too much. And the thing to stop you eating and give you strength is garlic. And it works as a diet. I give it to all you ladies free. In the first fortnight, she lost 15 pounds and 34 friends.
Mrs. Jenny Price, they may not be to your taste, but I hope they sounded all right. Thank you very much. And now, team, you're going to have a question from a lady all in blue, Mrs. Gillian Dunn. Hello, Mrs. Dunn. Question,
hello.
Please.
Does the team think that with the wide coverage now on television of world and home affairs, newspapers are really necessary?
Does the team think that with the wide coverage now on television of world and home affairs, that newspapers are really necessary?
Well, of course they are. How else would we eat our chips? You can't Eat your chips out of a television set?
I think that the newspapers are very essential. Joking apart, I mean, for example, I put them on the floor when I clean my boots and that sort of thing. They're very useful for that. But you see, you get more comment and you can digest and think about the comment more carefully than you can when you hear it and see it on television. It comes at you on television and it's through your nut and gone out before you can do anything about it. But you can sit down quietly over a cup of tea in the morning and digest what is written in the newspapers, and for that, I think they're absolutely essential.
But the strange thing is that when one reads something in a paper, this can always be taken as being authentic, in as much as if you say to your friends, all the Dutch have captured Holland. I heard it on television, and they say, I don't believe it. But if you say, I read it in the paper, here it is, look.
Yeah. Wait a minute, who had Holland before the Dutch? I question that remark. The Dutch have captured Holland?
It's taken you all this time to get that gag. I'm too subtle for this programme.
I think
this question is too serious for this game.
Let's find out from Mrs. Dunn whether she was really serious in putting this question and what her views are about her own question.
Yes, I was serious, but yes, I think they are necessary because the television, you have to take the news when it's presented. With the newspaper, you can just pick it up at your convenience.
I like
that. Actually is the best place to read them in.
I always take them into the reading room.
Team, what do you dislike about newspapers?
I don't dislike anything about newspapers.
No, they're marvellous. They do a wonderful job.
I'll say this. I think Tommy did mention it earlier. I'm not quite sure. But as far as we're concerned in our business, we rely. Our reputations are made or broken in the press. We like the papers when they're nice to us. I love all my nice press cuttings.
Yes,
the bad ones I throw away, of course.
Never ask a newspaper for a retraction.
That's true.
Because the late General Freiberg, a newspaper, wanted to print once the General Freiberg, the battle-scarred hero. And they put in General Freiberg, the battle-scared hero. So he asked for a retraction. And next day they printed what read General Freiberg, the battle-scared hero, should have read General Freiberg, the bottle-scarred hero.
Thank you, team, very much. And thank you very much, Mrs. Gillian Dunn. And that takes us now to the time when we meet our special guest, one of Britain's top recording artists, and now a stage and film star too. We're delighted to welcome Cilla Black. Welcome to the program. And I hope somewhere during this program you'll give me the opportunity of listening again to that beautiful little exclamation mark of a laugh of yours. But that comes later. Let's have your question first.
Well, I've got on a bit of paper down here.
You have.
So I can read it all out properly.
Good.
And I want to know that if the team were invited to cut a disc, what kind of song would they...
Wait a
minute. Listen to me.
Quite right.
If this is my party piece, what kind of song would each member of the team choose, and also what kind of backing?
If each member of the team were invited to cut a disc, what kind of song would each member of the team choose and what kind of backing?
How can you put a backing on the inside of a wax cylinder?
Yeah. No, it's true. When Ted went to make his latest recording, the recording manager...
I deny this.
Yes. Mr. Edison.
I deny it.
Said you're going to play and make a long played record.
Mr. Edison. 70.
And it was on a cylinder and it lasted a half a second.
Oh, yes, I like that.
Cilla would have no problem getting on a bicycle because she's wearing spotted trousers.
She's not getting on a bicycle, she's revolutionary on a record.
Do you know he looks the image of my dad?
Me? Which one? Say which one? With Ted Ray.
Ted, yeah.
Honestly?
What made you change your name from black to white?
Well, Ted Ray comes from Liverpool anyway.
No wonder you're so attractive if you have a handsome father.
Obviously, Ted Ray had a bicycle and a kilt.
But, Cilla, surely your father's not a midget as well?
Actually, I'm taller than him, my dad.
I'm tall.
He's the same size, he looks the same colour in all red face, and his hair's the same as well.
You can go off, people. Red face,
just a minute, Cilla, well, you said midget, her father's a boozer, like you.
He does, he likes his pint.
I certainly do, and anybody else's I can get over.
You said, Cilla, his face was red and his what was the same?
Oh,
his
her.
His her?
Yes.
Oh,
I mean his wife.
What's his her?
This is a delightful his thing
her.
About Cilla
his
Black.
Her.
Cilla Black, entirely uninhibited, the same sweet kid that came from Liverpool and went so far, so successfully, and justifiably so, and she's never tried to talk posh like what we have.
No.
She's never tried. You've tried and failed.
But, sir, I'll give you a secret. He is not from Liverpool. Wigan. That's where Ted
I know.
Comes from.
I was born in Wigan, but as soon as I could walk, I went to Liverpool.
Just because your mother was too lazy to carry you there.
My mother wasn't even there. The neighbours had me. Oh.
I think we
well,
all...
why did you go to Liverpool?
Why did I go? Because it's the greatest swinginest city in the world outside of London.
You'll notice that all the people who speak most proudly of Liverpool have already left it.
About this record I'm
yes,
going to make.
This record.
I would like to make what they call a protest song. I'm not quite sure what protest songs are, but I've read about them. And I want this to be a protest song with a brass band as backing. I want 180 players backing me up with bassoons. Not bassoons, euphonia.
180 players. Well, I suggest 179 harps and a bassoon.
No, I'm going to have...
Not a brass instrument. You're all talking. I'm sure you're all talking and you're being sort of... They're, you know, being funny about it, but I agree. I think if people want to put 140 harps on a record, I think it's great.
How and would I'd you like get them on?
Pardon?
Well, 140 harps on one little record?
Well, she's high
strung. I mean in the studio.
It may interest Miss Black to know that I have made several records. Oh. I have never been top of the hit parade, but my records do have a certain interest, a sort of collector's interest now. They are museum pieces. They're often played in Australia. I don't know why.
Well, they used to send convicts out there.
I get these checks from Australia.
Like you come from Czechoslovakia, don't they?
It's a very low part of Australia called Botany Bay. Botany Bay.
It's called West Australian Bush, it says on the return. Played 3 times, 6 and 9. Well, it's marvellous.
It's thrilling
to get this from the West Australian Bush. I think that my voice is heard out there without any interruptions from the team.
What is a protest song? That's what I want to know.
What you're doing all the time on the pound. You're protesting to everybody who asks you a question.
I'm not protesting. So, I'm just shouting my head off.
Yes, you are. You call that poor woman's baby before a 7-month-old puddin.
Team, let's just find out, because you might be able to take some advice from Scylla. Scylla, I'm sure you've thought about this. What sort of song or protest song would you think these gentlemen of the team could sing? Even if it's not protest, doesn't matter.
Oh, well, I think Jimmy should sing... you should sing a song about a sea shanty or something about drink. Because you're always going on about it, aren't you, Jimmy?
Scylla, what about Ted Ray?
I don't know.
The man looks like your dad. Be careful, now.
I think I've never heard him sing.
If he's like your dad, he ought to sing a song called I'm Forever Blowing Doubles.
Oh, yes, that's quite good.
You've never heard me sing, Scylla?
No,
I've
never
heard
you sing.
I do sing rather nice. I'm a bathroom singer, really. We have to. There's no lock on the door.
So am I. Listen, I am too.
You sing in your bath, Scylla.
I always do. I always sing
in
the
make the record? How can you get all those recording engineers stuck into the bathroom?
I like to, actually. In fact, I think the best sounds come from the loo, really. Isn't it?
Yes.
That's
like
an echo chamber.
Ted, that joke will be panned wherever it's heard.
Well, I tell you something, Scylla. We all envy any people who get into the top 10. It's no good saying we don't. We look for the easy way. We have to work very hard, we comics, to get our laughs. We have to go out and appear at places. And if you make a record, you know, it's a marvellous thing.
Well, the one that I made had I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles on the front side, and Why Did I Kiss That Girl on the...
Jet!
Is that your real name, Scylla Black?
No, my real name is Priscilla White.
Your name was White and you changed it to Black? This is something...
Oh, that was a mistake. You know, you were talking about papers before, right?
Yeah.
Well, there was a local paper in Liverpool. They knew my name was Scylla, but they didn't know. They knew it was a colour of some sort, and they knew it was either black or white, so they took it black.
Is
and
that
I,
true?
They did. So,
is that true?
Yes, and when I read the paper, I was so mad, and so was my father.
Because he looked like me.
So you decided
the paper wasn't red.
No, that.
Thank you, team. Thank you. And wishing Scylla Black all the luck in the future. Thank you, Scylla, for being one of the most delightful guests we've ever had. Thank you very much.
I'm most confused. I'm ever so confused.
Well, that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And now, team, we're going to welcome Mr. Edward Rhodes. Hello, Mr. Rhodes. Can we have your question, please?
What particular habit does the team hate?
What particular habit does the team hate?
Well, of course, the strange thing about this is, my wife said to me some time ago, if you don't stop doing that, she said, I'm going to leave you. Well, I must have stopped it because it's 20 years ago and she's still there. I wish I knew what it was. I'm worried.
But, Mr. Rhodes, we only see the bad habits in others, don't we, really? I mean, we don't know our own particular habit. My wife's got a terrible bad habit, and I can't break her of it. She's always saying, can I have some money?
There are a great many things that other people do that I don't like, Mr. Rhodes. For example, take just simply the realm of driving. As a motorist, I dislike the habit that people have of going into the right-hand lane in order to turn right at some lights, but not flashing the indicator. So you come up behind them and think, well, we're all right here. And as soon as the lights go green, they start flashing the indicator, and you're stuck there for another 5 minutes. Another thing, take the realm of the telephone. People who pick up the telephone and say, hello.
Well, you want them to say goodbye.
Have you ever had the sort of conversation on the telephone that I've had recently where you dial a number and a voice at the other end says, hello? So because they haven't announced their identity, I say, well, hello. And they say, hello. And I say, hello. And they say, who are you? And I say, never mind who I am. Who are you?
Who said we got no script writers in this country?
And this is costing money. Their duty is to say, this is, whatever the number is, London Wall 729.
Dieting, I think, is a bad habit. I'm thick and tired of it.
I hate when I ride on the tandem, my wife takes the lead. She's watching the country, and everything I see is so familiar.
Mr. Rhodes, what are the things about life that you hate, or the habits that you hate most?
Talking of bad habits,
Mr.
I'm an optimist.
Mr. Rhodes.
Oh, yes, any other. I haven't said anything yet.
Hang on, you will.
I think my...
I'd love to say something. I've got something goodbye. Very funny to say.
In a minute, sir.
Scream. I bet it's funnier than Mr. Rhodes's.
And what's more, you'll get more money than Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Rhodes, please.
Mr. Rhodes is looking like a very crossroads at the moment.
Mr. Rhodes is getting the biggest plug that anyone's ever had on this program.
I don't think he's Mr. Rhodes. I think he's Major Road Ahead.
If well, his I'm name afraid. Is Cecil, we could ask him some advice.
I'm afraid, gentlemen, that I can't stand smoking.
Well, why don't
you
sit
down? Well,
sit down. I thought I'd finish.
You're as bigoted as I am about smoking. Hooray, Mr. Rhodes, we see eye to eye on this. I'm utterly against all sorts of fumigation or whatever you like.
You've just had one of my best cigars.
I know, but I'm a non-smoker at heart.
Cyril Fletcher, say something funny.
Well, this is what I was going to say. I was going to say
something... That's great!
I do love it!
One of the most irritating habits is this habit of putting the little finger in the ear. A friend of mine was in a barber's having a
he has some wonderful programs that way though.
having a short back and sides in this barber's, and he suddenly looked on the floor and saw an ear on the floor. And he said to the barber, what's this ear, you see? And the barber said, I don't know. He said, whose is it? He said, I don't know. He said, put your finger in it. If it feels good, it's yours.
And there, I'm afraid, we must close. Does the team think for today? On behalf of Cyril Fletcher, Tommy Trindon, Ted Ray, Professor Jimmy Edwards, our thanks to all our questioners, and particularly to our special guest, Cilla Black. This is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.
Think was presented by the BBC.